we believe that in 2 weeks' time we definitely will be able to present to Parliament. Our strategic thrust is within what did we say last year about your entity? Have you been able to improve on what we said last year? And what are the critical things that we can be able to work between us and be able to take matters forward in a manner that will be able to assist the people of the Republic? On several occasions when we were talking to you, we impressed upon the challenges that are there in terms of the cross-border in Maseru, and we hope that that will be a thing of the past as you're reporting here now. But we are also mindful of the fact that this need to be a SADC-based approach that we are having, not looking inwardly in the Republic of South Africa, but look as to how do we interact with other SADC members as we are dealing with the challenges of cross-border transport. And we are looking forward to hearing from you. We have had engagement with the Auditor General of South Africa, and we are quite aware of the issues which actually, as we're engaging and interacting with the AG, and we believe that you're doing well. We must give praise where praise is deserved, and be able to take out the Shambok where we need to. But you are heartily welcome, Dr. Ramesi. I'm going to give it to you to give the introductory remarks and then give it to then make a presentation on your presentation.
Honorable Chairperson, members of the Portfolio Committee, thank you very much for this opportunity. Let me start by introducing our delegation from CDRTA. On my left-hand side next to me is the CEO, Mr. Sipho Khumalo. Then we've got the COO and acting CFO, who is Mr. Nchaupe Maepa. And we got the Manager Monitoring and Evaluation, Ms. Cindy Siwe Mazibuko. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee. It gives us much pleasure to come and report to the committee on the commitments we have made in the Annual Performance Plan for 2017-2018 financial year. This year, the CBRTA is celebrating 20 years in service of the cross-border road transport industry. Looking back at the journey we have traveled, working with our transport stakeholders, both from the SADC region and domestically, we have been hard at work facilitating unimpeded flow of goods and people across the borders of South Africa in line with our mandate. From the board, we are pleased with the achievement recorded in the financial year ended March 2018, particularly with the limited resources that we have. Chairperson, our problems are more or less well known, especially our limited financial resources. But I will now hand over to the CEO to give this committee a full presentation. I thank you.
Good afternoon, Honorable Chairperson. Good afternoon, members of the Portfolio Committee. I'll take you through our annual report presentation. Just to give you a sense of what we will cover in the presentation, we will deal with the mandate of the CBRTA. It's always important that we buttress our mandate. the strategic overview of our environment, our operational environment. We'll then take you through a performance summary, our journey thus far. As the chair has said, the chairperson of the portfolio committee, we are 20 years old this year. We're celebrating 20 years. We're one of the first four entities that were established by then Minister Mac Maharaj back in 1998. CBRT is one of the first four. You just saw another one. Sunrail is one of the first four as well. The other one that you will be seeing later, SAMHSA, is one of the first four. And the last one that you'll be seeing, which is one of the first four, will be South African Civil Aviation Authority. Those were the first four entities. Today we have 13 entities in transport, but these were the first four that were established back in 1998. It is therefore important, Chair, that when we reflect on how we've performed, much as the focus is on the last financial year, we also need to take a longer perspective of what has been the last 20 years like. Have we become a better institution or a worse institution? And we'll try and give you a sense of that journey. We'll also talk to the specific organizational performance for the financial year under review. We'll talk briefly about our social responsibility. We're a small entity with a very limited budget, but we do try our best also to be corporate citizens and to make a contribution in the lives of our people. We'll give you a sense of our financial performance for 2017-18 and our financial position. We'll talk briefly about our audit outcomes, and then we'll give you concluding remarks. Chairperson, the CBRTA was established on the 1st of April in 1998. It is established in terms of the Cross Border Act number 4 of 1998. The primary reason, Chairperson, for our existence is to license commercial cross-border operations. And the Act envisages that we will execute this mandate by eliminating impediments that constrain the flow of passengers and freight across South African borders, by regulating competition of passenger transport operators, by liberalizing market access for freight transport operators, by reducing operational constraints that have a negative impact on cross-border road transport industry, by enhancing and strengthening the capacity of the public sector to execute on these tasks, and building industry partnerships in order to empower the cross-border road transport industry. At any given point, Chair, when we reflect on what we do, we always use these guiding posts to check whether indeed the things we're doing and the things that we're established to do are consistent. So these serve at any given point in time as a reference point whether the activities that we engage in, whether the issues on which we spend quality time are in fact in furtherance of these objectives as articulated in the Act. When we look into the actual vision of the agency, Chair, we call ourselves the champion of free-flowing interstate operations. And this vision underpins the mission, which is to spearhead the unimpeded flow of interstate operations, thereby facilitating sustainable social and economic development. Underpinning this mission are the goals of the entity, which speak to these strategic objectives as articulated in the Act, Chairperson. And underpinning everything we do are the values of the agency. Values have become an important issue for the times we're living in, where we all need to be conscious of whether indeed the values that we espouse are reflected in the way we conduct ourselves on a day-to-day basis. And the core values of the CBRTA are integrity, transparency, reliability, efficiency, effectiveness, and social responsibility. It's therefore important that when at any given point in time when we look at the things we do, we check whether indeed these values continue to underpin the way we conduct ourselves on a day-to-day basis. Chairperson, just to give a sense of the operating environment, I've put a map there that articulates the main arterial roads that link to the borders. There are 53 land border posts between South Africa and our immediate neighbors. Of the 53, 19 borders are designated as commercial border posts. Then there are four border posts that actually carry over 70% of the traffic, commercial passenger and freight vehicles. And these are Bay Bridge,
Lebombo,
Maseru, and Skelspasak. These border posts are located in the busiest corridors linking our country to the SADC region through the North-South Corridor, the Trans-Kalahari Corridor, and the Maputo Development Corridor. It's also important, Chairperson, that when we look at the role of the CBRTA, we always put it in context, because the Act enjoins us to facilitate the free flow of people and goods across our borders, but the reality is we are not the only player at the border environment. We have to coexist in the border environment with the Department of Home Affairs, who are responsible for immigration. We are in a process of establishing a dedicated border management authority that will be responsible for the management as that will assume the overall responsibility over the management of the functioning of border posts. We also have, of course, South African Revenue Services that are responsible for customs. You have the South African Police Services, who have a border policing function. You also have agriculture, forestry, and fisheries. You also have port health and state security. So, Chairperson, in whatever we do, we need to make sure that we liaise and we work in partnership and close collaboration with all these entities and government departments, and none of us have the absolute authority over what happens at the border, and therefore peer influence is the only mechanism we have of ensuring that what we are driving towards actually gets to be recognized and supported by our counterparts within the border environment. I think it's important to put that perspective, Chair, because it illustrates the complexity of managing in a border environment. But more so, it actually buttresses the need for us as a country to establish a single authority that will have overriding responsibility and authority over the functioning of a border, of the border environment. Chairperson, let me move on to reflect on our operational environment. We've looked at the socio-economic environment, we've looked at the regional environment, and we've also looked at the internal environment. With respect to the socio-economic environment, Chairperson, we all know that in 2017, South Africa's rating was put below investment grade by two of the three leading rating agencies. This implied an increased cost of doing business, particularly for your freight operators that are transporting goods between our country and our neighboring countries. When you look into the regional environment, the CBRTA's strategic focus stretches beyond the SADC region. There's a commitment that we've signed to which our own president has articulated, of establishing a free trade agreement across the entire continent. This pushes all of us to then think beyond just SADC, Chairperson, but to think about what impact are we going to have over EAC and what impact are we going to have in the COMESA region as well. Because the whole Africa, we're looking into integrating towards a common free trade agreement for the entire continent. We all know, Chairperson, that natural resources and primary commodities remain a major driver of the economic growth within our continent. And mainly these corridors that we regulate in are the key trajectories through which we export these minerals to the primary environments that we export to internationally. Domestic demands are driven by Africa's growing population, and our economic growth generally as a continent are not keeping up with the growth of our population. So increasingly the continent is becoming poorer and poorer because we have populations that are outgrowing at a rate that is faster than the economic growth of the continent in respect to the number of countries. We have therefore adopted an approach, Chairperson, in responding to this that's called Linking Africa, which places the role of the CBRTA beyond just the SADC region, but that says how do we articulate on the giving effect to our mandate at a broader level than just the SADC region and with a focus on COMESA and EAC. Looking into the internal environment, Chairperson, the total staff component of the CBRTA as of the 31st of March was 164 people. Females constituted 62% of our workforce and males constituted 38%. Management maintains the relationship with organized labor. The dominant union in our environment was Pope Crew. This is born from the fact that in the past, before we lost the Road Transport Inspectorate Division, law enforcement was the largest component of our employees. The internal control environment, the agency maintains a sound and effective internal control and risk management systems, and I think these have been borne out by the audit outcomes that we've achieved over the last 3 years. Just to give you a sense of the performance journey, Chair, I said I want to buttress this 20-year journey of ours, and we've tried to give you here a sense, at least from the financial year 2009-2010. You have those things that look like cigarettes there. They are actually showing you how low our performance levels were in those early years.
Contraband cigarettes.
Yes, Chair. You'll notice, Chair, that the greens are increasingly growing and growing. But you'll also notice that from 2011, 2012 to 2016, 2017, it seems like we stagnated around 67%. And the question becomes, why were you not performing at a higher level? Chairperson, would remember that we've always been a resource-constrained organization and we've had to conserve cash. So in each of those years, we would deliberately decide which projects we would not pursue because we never had enough money to be able to fulfill all the commitments we would have made. And therefore, our performance has tended to roll around that 67-68%. But the question becomes, what happened in the last financial year? Why have we all of a sudden shot up in performance? And I will explain that, Chair, when I explain how we've managed to reduce part of the obligation we had in respect to the commitments and the money that we were owing to the industry following a court case that we lost in the Constitutional Court. I'll come back to that one, Chair. Just in terms of organizational performance, Chair, we've achieved 82.31% of our predetermined targets, signifying a 25.64 increase compared to prior year's performance. The only objective that we didn't achieve in the financial year that has ended was in respect to the implementation of cross-border charges as an additional revenue stream. And the reason why we were not able to achieve this particular objective is because for the achievement of this one, we're relying on a number of players, including the Department of Transport, the Department of National Treasury, and we've also had engagements with SANRAL, because if we have to levy charges, cross-border charges, it must be primarily because foreign vehicles are using our infrastructure and damaging our infrastructure. And therefore, even though as CBRTA we have a role to play from a regulatory point of view, we think the primary beneficiary of such a scheme should be SANRAL, because they are responsible for the maintenance of those roads. And therefore, it requires all of us to work in concert with SANRAL, with the Department of Transport, and National Treasury to ensure that we achieve this objective as a collective. And because of that, it proved to be too much to hope to have achieved this in one financial year. And it's the main reason why this only objective, which we didn't achieve, was not achieved. Chairperson, I will now take you through the specific objectives and targets that we were able to reach that gave us this total performance that we are reflecting there of 92%. Looking into the first one, Chair, is the development and implementation of a new cross-border management system. To this effect, Chair, the target was to develop an enterprise architecture for cross-border management system, and we're able to achieve the enterprise architecture and the roadmap which were completed as approved. The business case for the integrated cross-border management system was also considered and approved. We also sought to develop the permit fee for regulations. We amended the draft permit fee regulations, which we submitted to the Department of Transport, and these regulations were amended and submitted for further publishing, and the Department of Transport published them in March this year. The regulations were therefore published on the 28th of March, and we're still waiting for the promulgation of these regulations so that we can increase our tariffs accordingly. The third objective was the implementation of a scientific tool used by the regulatory committee to manage supply and demand of cross-border passenger transport. We fully implemented the scientific tool, and the regulatory committee held a workshop on the refined model parameters of the market access regulation tool, and the tool was subsequently approved. The regulatory committee has since tested the tool by using it as a reference during the regulatory hearings, which are the meetings where the regulatory committee determines who gets a cross-border permit and who doesn't. This achievement, Chairperson, I must say, marks a significant milestone towards the improvement of the efficiency of the CBRTA, business system, particularly the IT system, as the key output of this exercise include the development of the operator compliance accreditation scheme as well as a sub-element of that IT system. The third or the seventh one there is the development and the implementation of, or have I skipped? My apologies, I think I've skipped a slide here. Oh yeah. The fourth one is the development and implementation of the operator compliance accreditation scheme. The board has approved the draft legislation in this regard. The legislative proposal for the implementation of OCAS was drafted and approved by the board. OCAS was then presented to the Department of Transport's EXCO, and submission was made to COTO and MINMEC to this effect. The percentage of temporary permits issued within a predetermined turnaround time, the target there was 90% of compliant applications for temporary permits needed to be processed and issued in the front office within 1 day, and 90% of compliant applications for temporary permits needed to be processed and issued in the remote office within a period of 2 days, and both targets were met. 99.42% of compliant permits were processed and were issued within a day in the front office, and 98.15% of compliant remote temporary permits were processed and issued within the two days, which, and so in both cases, we're able to exceed the target we had set for ourselves. The sixth one speaks to the number of operator corridor profiling reports. The intention here was to develop four Section 39 reports in respect to the law enforcement for the regulatory committee to know what is happening in the environment in which we regulate, and all four were produced and the regulatory committee was able to consider them. We then developed and implemented a stakeholder management plan. The board approved such a plan, and we also hosted the Oliver Tambo International Road Transport Indaba, which was a way of soliciting the support and the buy-in of our stakeholders within the continent on the Linking Africa plan, which was also adopted at this Indaba. Very successful conference that we hosted, and we're still getting accolades from a number of our counterparts for the work that we achieved at this particular conference. This is where the Linking Africa plan was officially adopted, and it is now a part of the program of what the ministers of transport are reflecting on an annual basis. And recently we were presenting on it again in Namibia during the recent meeting of the SADC meeting of ministers of transport. We facilitated the implementation of the SADC protocol and regional agreements. We workshopped the SADC protocol and regional agreements with a view to determining where are the gaps, where are we supposed to be, what we had intended to achieve versus what we've achieved, what are the gaps, and what are we doing to fulfill those gaps. The SADC workshop was held during the October Transport Month. The workshop agreed on the establishment of the Cross-Border Road Transport Regulators Forum, which is a regional body that has been put together to fast-track the implementation of the SADC protocol and to hold all of us responsible as the different member states in respect to our failure to achieve objectives that have been commonly agreed to. This body has since been endorsed by the SADC meeting of ministers of transport, and at the recent meeting we were able to present the terms of reference and the strategy of the SADC Cross-Border Road Transport Regulators Forum in Namibia last month. We've developed and implemented the industry development strategy. The board approved the development of such a strategy, and through this strategy, we've developed an initiative we call Border Towns Initiative, which involves us going to border towns and ensuring that we work with youth and women with a view to ensuring that they become beneficiaries of their strategic positioning within the corridors through which a major exports are taking place from within our country. We've also developed a number of the annual State of Cross-Border Operators reports, which we call ASCIBO, which were submitted to the minister and other relevant stakeholders. These reports, Chairperson, are used to benchmark the state of cross-border operations in every border post, particularly the commercial border posts. The idea is to say, if this is the state this year, these are the interventions we identify and we put in place, then we see how much achievement we've achieved the following year. So we're doing this on an annual basis so that on a year-to-year basis, we're able to track progress and see indeed if the constraints, the challenges that are experienced by the operators at these commercial border posts, we're able to remove them or reduce their impact in terms of time, the delays that are being experienced by operators as they traverse through our border posts. We've also developed country profiles where we actually look into the different countries and say what are the opportunities. The two countries that we're focusing on in the financial year that ended was Swaziland and Botswana, and these profiles are being used to inform those who are interested in coming into this industry as operators to know what are the export opportunities, what are the import opportunities in those countries, and how do you go about aligning yourself so that you can become an entrance, a new entrant into the cross-border operating environment. All these are done, Chair, with a view to try to help increase the number of black participation in cross-border in a logistics environment, which historically has not been that significant. We've also developed a model to calculate the transit and costs of delays at commercial border posts. We call it the cross-border flow calculator, and the concept document was adopted and approved, and the cross-border flow concept document, which was approved, is now being developed into a tool which will serve actually as a mechanism of measuring the state of delays and the times of and the costs associated with those delays at the border posts. Chairperson, just looking into the organizational performance in the issuance of permits, you'll notice that we have a small decline in the number of freight permits issued in 2017-18 versus the previous financial year of 16-17. The rest of the other categories, buses, taxis, tourists, have all increased. Buses increased by 28%, taxis by 45%, and tourists by 15%. And we have that pie chart there that shows you the total number of permits issued, and you'll notice that a significant proportion of those permits are actually your freight permits. But it is a concern that there's this 2% decline, which is not characteristic. In the past, we've tended to see a small increase in the number of freight permits we issue year on year, but we've also noticed that even in the current financial year, even though it hasn't ended, this decline of 2% seems to be persisting. And this is a concern because it reflects on the economic sluggish nature of the economic performance of our respective countries within the region, both the countries in Africa that we're exporting to and that are actually importing things from us as well. Just to give you the breakdown of the number of freight permits issued per country, you notice that 18%, I think the biggest component now is for Zambia, which is 20%, followed by Zimbabwe, which is 18%, and the percentages are declining accordingly, 15, 13, 9, and so on, and the different countries. But just for you to have a clear perspective of saying that Zambia continues to be the biggest country that does business from a freight point of view with South Africa, and it's mainly influenced by copper and cobalt that is flowing between the two countries. Because they actually use our Durban port as their export port. Just in terms of the taxi passenger permits issued, there you'll notice that the biggest proportion at Zimbabwe, followed by Mozambique, then followed by Lesotho, and then followed by Swaziland, and then the small percentages to the other countries. But a huge, huge proportion of the taxi permits are to Zimbabwe and Mozambique, which are the two dominant environments where there is a lot of immigrants and migration of people who either live in those countries, work in South Africa, and people who actually live in South Africa but who also have families in those countries who came here for purposes of being migrant workers. The permits, bus permits issued per country, the biggest component, again, is to Zimbabwe, 54% of the permits, and then 12% is to Mozambique, 10% to Lesotho, and then you have small proportions to all the other countries that are following there, with DRC being the smallest market to the, in this regard. And the last one, Chair, is with respect to the tourist permits. The tourist permits, we don't break country by country because you have a lot of tourists who actually come here and actually tour a number of countries at the same time. So it becomes very difficult to say to where these permits are issued, because some tourists will actually come to South Africa, traverse through Botswana, go to Okavango Delta, go all the way to Zambia, all the way to Kenya, and so on. So it's very difficult to break those by country. But the total proportion of the permits issued to the region were 98%, and 2% of those went to cabotage. Just in terms of the inspections, Chairperson, the law enforcement side of things, vehicle inspections increased by 1%. In the financial year that has ended compared to 16-17. Number of prosecutions also increased by 28% in the previous financial year compared to 2016-17. The part that is worrying is the compliance rate, which dropped by 1% from 94% to 93%. Just on the social responsibility side of things, Chair, in an effort to advance youth and women empowerment, the agency conducted career exhibitions, information workshops, and seminars as follows. We had a knowledge seminar with the University of Johannesburg students in educating them about our operational environment and encouraging them to become experts in cross-border regulation and transport regulation. We also had a youth empowerment workshop in Musina to educate youth on opportunities available within the cross-border space, especially export, and there's a very few of our people who are actually into export business or import business. We had an information sharing seminar targeting communities around Oshuk Border Post, which we hosted in collaboration with the Chief Albert Lutuli local municipality. We had a road safety education session supported by sister agencies like SANRAL and South African the Road Accident Fund, which was held with two primary schools in that BSCOP. We had a campaign to attract new entrants into the cross-border market held in Mahobistat in Northwest Province. And in partnership with the National Department of Transport, we had a career exhibition which was conducted for grades 10 to 12 learners in Limpopo, November, and Northwest and Mpumalanga Province. As a small entity, Chairperson, we are unable to spend huge monies on these type of things. We have a very small budget, but this is our effort to demonstrate that we also see ourselves needing to play a role in this space. Chairperson, will then move into the financial performance of the agency. I'm struggling to read the numbers here. They are too small in... Just to give you a sense, Chairperson, again, in terms of permit income is our key revenue stream. You notice that 993,663,000 was our revenue coming from permit income. And then there is this prescription write-back, Chairperson, and I need to talk about this in terms of the, what do you call that act? Prescription Act, yes. We have applied the provisions of the Prescription Act, which says that if I owe a debt to someone and that person doesn't raise that debt or bring it to my attention that I'm owing them, and the period of 3 years lapses, that debt prescribes. We had a huge issue with the Auditor General's office on this one because they even had to go and have it technically reviewed, our understanding and the correctness of our application of this Prescription Act. And in the end, we've all agreed that we were correct in applying the provisions of the Prescription Act, which means, Chairperson, that we are now able to write back the debt. Remember that we had owed operators 318 million. About half of that money was claimed by operators, those who came to claim their monies. But there's about half of them who never showed up to claim this money, and we've now written this money back, which was a contingent liability waiting for a person to come and claim it. But we now, after the 3 years period has lapsed since the time when the Constitutional Court took the decision, we've now written this money back, and it has reduced our liability considerably, which has also assisted our solvency status as an agency, because we're technically insolvent, as you'd know, Chair, in the previous reports that we've presented to yourselves. Maybe I should also ask Ntate Maepa to then walk us through the next slides there on the financial status.
Thank you, CEO, Chairperson, honorable members. Just as indication, I think the CEO has covered on the financial performance, but in the main, the permit revenue remains our funding stream, our key funding stream, and that's the reason why we need to make sure that we protect also the stream itself. We are also seeing a slight decrease, as the CEO indicated, in relation to the freight permits, and it's reflecting at 1% if we compare it with the previous financial year. We've also just included in our financials the permit, the penalty revenue. You'll recall that the law enforcement was transferred to RTMC. However, in terms of the principal agency relationship, the penalty revenue still belongs to the CBRTA because the mandate is with us. However, it's similarly a fee that we pay to the RTMC as admin fee. So the same amount that we record as revenue on penalty is the same amount that we then pay over to RTMC as admin fee because they are performing the function on our behalf. Just in terms of the expenditure, you'll see that our employee costs constitute about 56% of our total expenditure for the year, with operating expenditure being about 27%. As indicated, we have put in place a cost-saving strategy that seeks to ensure that we conserve cash previously in terms of trying to make sure that we service the debt that was in place at the time that the CEO says has since now prescribed. So we had to make sure that we have got a strategy to conserve cash and generate surpluses to be able to then service the debt. And to that extent, as of the year end, we then reported a surplus of 55 million. Just moving on in terms of financial position, I think the key issues to raise on financial position there is that as of the end of the year, we were still in a state of technical insolvency because our liabilities exceeded our assets by 124 million. And this mainly related to the debt that the CEO was talking about. The prescription of the debt coming from the Constitutional Court actually happened after year end, meaning that it's only on the 8th of May that it's prescribing. So at the end of the year, at the end of March, we're still in technical insolvency. But with the prescription coming in on the 8th of May, means that we are then able to write back that part. So what we have included as a write back income on the other side is coming from the directory order that was issued. That one prescribed in the financial year, it's only 20 million. There was a 37 million that was coming from the same case, but there was a different court judgment there. And that was 37 million, and we still had 19 million that was due, that prescribed in the financial year, and the rest of the money, 164 million, then prescribed after the financial year is recorded as a post-balance sheet event. That's also indicating the accumulated deficit then that we had was reduced by 30% because we were then in the year still servicing the debt, and a total of 142 million was then refunded to the operators as at the end of the year. So since we started with the refund of the 318 million, we had since serviced 142 million with the difference then prescribing as indicated. So also just to indicate that the contingent liability that we are now recording in our financials now related to the 2014 tariffs. The contingent liability that is now have prescribed related to 2011 tariffs, but then this one is basically the 2014 tariffs that is still ongoing. So the matter has not yet been finalized in court, but we have been challenged on the payment tariffs or payment regulations that we have put in place. Also, just here to indicate that for the year that ended, we had no fruitless and wasteful expenditure that was recorded. Moving on to the audit outcomes, the audit outcomes as indicated there, you will see that for the past 3 years, including the 2017-18 financial year, we've been achieving clean audit. As an improvement from the previous years, you'll see that for 2012, 2013, 14, 15, it was unqualified audit for the first time, and then migrated to clean audit since 2015-16. That was still the case in 2017-18, making three in a row. The audit conclusion, Chairperson and members, just indicated there on the audit Auditor General's report, indicating that our financial statements fairly represent the financial information, the position and performance of the organization, and also just indicating that there were no material adjustments to the financials that were presented on the 31st of May. There were also no material findings on the usefulness and reliability of the performance information that we have reported. So the 92% that we have reported as achievement is not dated by any findings around the usefulness and reliability of that information that we have reported. Also, there were no material non-compliances in relation to the legislation, be it the PFMA, the CBRTA Act, and so forth. And what the auditors, the AG then did is just to then record a matter of emphasis relating to this court challenge on the 2014 tariffs that I've just indicated.
Chair, just to give some concluding remarks then, just to reflect on the challenges facing the agency. The key challenge, Chair, is in respect to permit tariffs. They constitute a lifeblood of the agency and they have not been revised since May 2014. That means we continue to operate in 2018 on fee tariffs of 2014. Everything else, the costs are escalating, but our tariffs have been stuck since 2014. And this is a big risk, Chair, because it threatens our financial position, but it also means that increasingly, as we get into new years, we are actually operating on less and less funds than the previous financial year. The litigation issue also, the fact that the 2014 permit tariff regulation is still not concluded, continues to put us in a difficult position because we must continue to provide a contingent liability in the event that the case goes against us. We are now told that the matter will sit down for the 3rd of December this year. We are very hopeful because we are very confident that, as opposed to the previous one, we have a very good chance in this case in respect to the 2014 tariff challenge. And we think that if this matter is put to bed, it will make our lives easier because we can plan the way forward. We also note, Chair, that the board of the CBRTA is not properly constituted for over 18 months now. This creates a quorum problem for the regulatory committee, which is a quasi-judicial structure established in terms of the Act. And the Act is very clear about the type of expertise we ought to have in the board. And we currently don't have the requisite expertise as prescribed in the Act in the board, which means the decisions that the board continues to make could also be open to litigation unnecessarily if we don't close those gaps in respect to ensuring that the board is properly constituted as prescribed by the Act. And all these matters, Chair, I need to say have been raised with the Minister of Transport. The last letter that the chairperson wrote to the minister was on the 18th of March this year, raising these matters, but as of now, these challenges remain with us. Finally, Chair, I need to say that we continue to work closely with and in collaboration with cross-border stakeholders, both domestically and across the borders, in pursuit of our mandate of improving goods, people, and people across our borders, and I think we've registered some significant milestones with the establishment of the Cross-Border Road Transport Regulators Forum, which has now given us an ability to have impact beyond our borders, and we're also able to go and meet directly with ministers of transport in the different countries in our capacity as chair of the Cross-Border Road Transport Regulators Forum, with a view to actually resolving some of the challenges that historically we had no way of controlling in respect to countries that fall outside of our borders. Chairperson, I thank you.
Thank you very much. Chairperson, any other thing? Before I open for the members to engage with the presentation.
Chairperson, there was a matter that I would have requested your indulgence on. I don't know whether it's appropriate to put it now or leave it for later, Chairperson. It's not in the presentation.
Have a presentation over the matter and then members will be able to engage as we go on.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I've been the chairman of, or the chairperson of Cross-Border Road Transport Agency for now 1 year, 11 months, and 16 days. And, Chairperson, in that time, there's always been this constant matter that does not fully fall under fruitless and wasteful expenditure, as is, you know, as defined in the Act, in the PFMA, and this matter is still continuing. And really, Chairperson, I think somewhere along the way it should be accounted for, or I should account for it, because my term on this board is coming to an end, and I would not like, I'll be remiss to leave without reporting this matter. Chairperson, if one takes the role of the board of directors, in short, as being to provide governance, I mean, guidance and oversight of the affairs of the entity, one, I can say here and now that the board of CEO, we have failed in all respect, and we haven't even attempted to provide that oversight or guidance, neither of the two. I further submit, Chairperson, that more than 75% of board meetings that were convened under my authority as the Chairperson were simply a waste of resources because they were not focused on the business of CBRTA. And I can even claim that, you know, many of the approvals that I have signed on that board, we were merely rubber stamping, because if one board member reads the submissions out of six, you really cannot say that there was proper oversight exercised before any of the matters that I have signed as a, you know, I voted on that board. Lastly, Chairperson, and most of all, in the 2 years that I've been there, or close to 2 years now as a Chairperson, our main focus as the board has been the CEO. And that must be recorded as such. And, you know, twas at the beginning of this year, or twas earlier this year, we even changed our tune as the board from merely focusing on trying to frustrate the CEO to actually attempting to cause CBRTA to fail in its mission. And thus, Chairperson, I submit that really the stipends that we as board members have been paid are wasteful or in vain, let me put it that way. And somewhere along the way, I wish that a solution can be found to ensure that the board performs its role and CBRT will continue in its current state. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Kaspe Divari, Chairperson, we relate to Laribon. I can't translate it anyhow. Kiona you, just like that. Chula reward. Yeah. Wow. What a note to end on, Tateramat. I'm going to request members to engage, but also pick up and let's advise on how we can be able to deal with this final statements as put forward by the board chairperson of the board, Mr. Ramate, on the board. And outright, I would say that probably we need to chase around board members for having received money and not having done the work. That is a knee-jerk approach, but also we need to look as to how best can we assist by making sure that the minister urgently puts in a board that will be functional. Part of the things that we have realized in other entities is that for the fact that the board is not there, the center cannot be able to hold And that is why you'll find so many questions that the AG has raised, issues of governance, issues of leadership, matters that are every now and then repetitive, precisely because the board is not holding the functionaries accountable. Honorable Ramatlakana, Honorable Sibande, Honorable Humsinga, I'll take all the hands at the go. Honorable Kago, you'll be the last one.
Well, thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and let me thank the chairperson also with that important ending. I'll call it important ending. But in the main, I think that we should record the committee's appreciation for the clean audit. Clean audit, in spite of all the other issues that has been raised at the end, that the agency at least is it's something that we can look upon and say it's doing a good job. It's one of the many struggling agencies to arrive at that point. If anything, we've seen a reversal in terms of what the AG has recorded. Just a quick one, Chair, because I think that the agency, we don't have to keep them long because I think they did a good job in the year under the review. But let me just say that I'm just casting my mind backwards in our last engagement. If I remember correctly, there was a conclusion of the policy document or document that was submitted to the department or ministry for finalization or approval around the issues of cross-border as well as Maseru Free State. I don't know how that process, where that process is, because I don't remember us getting a document or a narrative. Maybe it would be useful to ask Chair that perhaps we should be privy to that. Now, the reason it was not presented the last time, it was because there was an issue that the minister would have to, or the department and the minister must of course give a green light first on that. Now, I don't know, you didn't mention it. I'm asking it because you also show us the major cross-border focus area. How far is that process? Because it's almost a year ago since we talked about it. Can you tick that box to say it is done? And then if it's done, it's implementable in terms of the behavior that we were seeing from the Free State attempt to contract out of what has been agreed between the countries. So if we could just be at least helped to understand that. And then, Chair, on the... I seem to remember a promise by the minister with a timetable, spreadsheet of timetable, that indicated when all the board and the weaknesses in the board would be filled and arrested. And I seem to remember that you were mentioned in that particular schedule. And if I remember correctly, the time of that has a little bit passed. It was somewhere, if I remember, and I'm using my memory, around August, September, but it was just after the first half of the year. Now I'm a bit stunned, I've been taken aback to hear that actually it's contrary is true. I mean, I think there's a matter that we need to follow up. We have been concerned about the problem of vacancies in the board and the vacancies which result in board which does not meet the requirement of the Act. Because all the decisions, you just need anybody from the street to write one letter to you to reverse everything that is called a decision. You just need anybody that is sitting there in front of court to say that that board was defective, that decision is defective. You can't prove that it wasn't defective. So it's an urgent matter of addressing that, because if you have a decision that is on your minute book, there would have to be condonation. There has to be retrospective condonation or minutes has to be considered and approved as the minutes that the board basically own up to. Now, I don't know how many vacancies you have that need to be filled and how quick that can happen to make sure that you don't reverse. Otherwise, there is a danger here. I don't know, there was a representative of the department that was sitting here, is sitting there. What role have they played in the assistance of ensuring that the issue about the vacancies of the board is addressed? Good governance. Kincaid 4 specifically, deal with this issue. Now, we can't be a creature of statute and actually not even adhere to that thing. But I know it's not in your hand, but you are appearing before us. Chair, I just want to come to this point. The accounting authority and the one that provides a vision and direction is the board. If you don't have that, you don't have the board. If you don't have that, you only have administrators who would then run with what they need to do, because they are functionaries. That also is a problem, that it's a violation of King Code. Some people say King Code is not law, it's a policy. Actually, it's authority particularly on the state agencies like yours. So I just want to say, Chair, on that score, I mean, the letter of the 18th of March, there hasn't been anything again now. 18th March is about 6 months ago. Any other processes? Perhaps we need to hear from the board member representing the shareholder. If the shareholder has a response. Now, I just want to ask this question. In terms of the tariffs, isn't it that the modus operandi would have been that the board in its meeting then suggest the tariffs, adjustment or review of the tariffs, and they would have done a bit of an exercise in terms of the various indicators that indicate that this should be the increase of tariffs, and then suggest to the shareholders for the approval. Has that been done, or has that not been done because of the problem of the board? If maybe the CEO can clarify that last issue. And I'm happy to hear about the SADC and the engagement with that, and of course the continent approach to it. There's a troubling issue that we had some conversation with you about before, which could also help you to increase your revenue, or address your revenue at least. It's a consistency issue. Has the consistency issue been addressed? Remember, we said if you charge, if this is a treatment that you are subjected to once you cross the board, the same thing has to happen when everybody crossed the board. And there was whole discussion about ministerial engagement that would ensue in order to avoid that happening. But we were quite firm that if that is what you do, what you are subjected to, you should retain the favor. And only when you retain the favor, somebody will say something must be done. But if you don't, people will continue to ride roughshod over it. I want to know, how far is that process? It's also waiting for some decision or what's happening around that particular, or maybe you would say it was addressed because we had the forum. Because the last time there was going to be a forum of ministers, it was mooted that maybe the approach should be the forum of ministers to resolve this issue. But you can't now respond on behalf of the board, but you should be the advisory body to the forum of ministers in terms of addressing this question. Has all of that happened? Really, that's it. It boiled down to that particular question. Or is still about to happen? That's really the question that I'm troubled with. But at the end of chair, it's for me, it's just to at least to say congratulations are in order. But they can be short-lived. They can be short-lived. This issue about governance is a big worry for me. It can put you back into 2-3 step backwards, if not addressed immediately. But of course, you've got limitation. We will continue to support the work that you do, because I think it's an important work that the agency is doing. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Sibande.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll also wanted to start to join my colleague to commend the CBRTA about the marvelous job to receive such a marvelous opinion for consecutive 3 years. But nevertheless, we need to sharpen each other where there are still challenges. I was impressed, the Chairperson of the board, when you were alluding to some of the things, because they are there in the findings of the Auditor General. I'll come to them. Chairperson, I wanted maybe from the presentation to get something. If I was listening to Indicator 8 in terms of organizational performance achievements, achieved targets, now. You see, I agree that you had a workshop for this thing of SADC and the like, but I'm subject for correction. Previously, sorry, the key fundamental challenge was that in the SADC, South Africa was leading, but some countries were not complying. And also their challenge was that they don't have resources like, that was their argument, that they don't have resources like us. For an example, there was a time whereby there was a request that Swaziland Border Post must open 24 hours. And then they complained that they can't accept that one because they don't have resources, they don't have much manpower, they don't have houses to house all these people to, who are supposed to mend the border post. But after this, I want to check that the issue of compliance, are they complying or not? And then also, when you would be busy giving us about the issue of the statistics in terms of the percentages, I was impressed when you were saying senior management, you have accumulated, now it stands at 42%. But you never indicated to us about about top management. Because normally, I'll repeat what I've said earlier on. See, other people, when they talk about in terms of deploying females in addressing the issue of gender, they talk about leaning and alike. But when it comes to positions, it's very difficult. And then also, Chief, you in your presentation, you've made an omission because you indicated about the case. You said you'll come back later, that the case which you have lost. Because I believe in one, that empower us in order to empower you. Because when you give us information, it's very easy for us to assess whether is it that needed an amendment of our laws and et cetera, et cetera. And then also, Chairperson, you see, around Gangwanas, if you're going towards KZN and Mpumalanga, towards Pongola, you pass Pongola Josine, the other side of this side. Remember, there was in a time whereby they even requested the Minister of Police to come and assist, because it was, that border was perceived as the highly border which is used by the criminals to steal vehicles this side to the other side. I wanted maybe to find out, because I was impressed when you were reporting about other border posts, that everything is okay, but there is still a question mark. What is the status quo at the moment? Because in that era, the communities were up in arms about those things. And then also, my colleague, Honorable Member Ramatlakane, in the comment of the conclusion about the issue of the board, I'm a little bit concerned that one. I think we must face it straight. I couldn't understand when he was saying another contribution factor of the weaknesses of the board is that it's because of the vacancies, contributed by the vacancies. I can agree. I don't disagree with him. But, Chairperson, as I indicated earlier on, that I was impressed about the approach of the chairperson of the board, because it's honest. I thought that what's supposed to come out is that, because you indicated that the board now is not properly constituted for over 18 months, and I assume that there are people who are receiving money, salaries, isn't it? But while they're not coming to the meeting. I've thought that, therefore, I've thought that we're supposed to be guided so that we can make some proposals. For an example, no matter there are vacancies, but there are people who concern, who come, honestly, those that deserve to get salaries. But people who doesn't come at all, expecting to get salary, no, they must pay it back. That is a fact. And another factor is that when we are quiet, it happens that when the term of the board elapses, the very same culprits are being mandated to go and serve in other boards instead of dealing with that, disciplining that person, not to get another opportunity to go to sit down to another board. Because he or she was not functional. I think that one, it must be addressed like that. They must pay back the money, because the register can attest on that one. Because I believe when attend meeting, we sign, no, people normally sign register, a roll call, that these people were present, these people were not present. So why must we be apologetic about that in terms of addressing it? We must address it once and for all, that those who didn't attend it, they must pay back the money. And also, to strengthen that point, yes, my colleague, Honorable Member Ramatlakan, was correct in terms when referring to King Code 4, which is an authority. I agree. But also supposed to add PFMA. You are accounting officers. You're supposed to account. But people who are failing to account, what do you do with them? I don't want to use that word, which is paperlazy. You know, because that word is destructive. And, Chairperson, if you go to another thing which I needed clarity, you indicated that the litigation against the 2014 payments tariff regulation still not concluded. May you please elaborate more so that we can see and assist each other that where is the problem? Why is not finalized if it come to impulse? Because to, you know, people, if they are working so hard, they're supposed to be supported more than that. Where is the problem? Take us on board so that we can be able to assist you. And then other one, the issue of indicators 12. Yes. In your indicators number 12, you reported that you have developed a model to calculate transit and cost of delays of commercial border posts. My question is that does this instrument manage to address the bottlenecking? Because, you know, what was the key challenge in the past was that we had the serious problems in terms of bottlenecking in our border posts. I'll put another example. Do you still remember when we were going to Lesotho? To an extent, another contribution factor of the bottlenecking was not the site of South Africa. It was in the site of Lesotho, whereby they were unable to produce authentic documents. Instead of producing a passport and the like, they were producing piece of papers. Only to find that it's very difficult from our side, because those are not passports. At the end, you'll find that it is very difficult for the people who are positive, who does have passport, to go that side to other side, because people will be blocking in the border post. So I wanted to get clarity on that regard, that is it solving a problem or what is it? The last one is an you spoke about last one about the KIP is not achieved in terms of implementing the cross-border charges as an additional revenue streams. You see, with that one, I want to add something as well. I think any law mustn't assist the country only, but also the law must protect the citizens of South Africa. I'll put an example now. Most of the drivers, truck drivers who are going towards DRC and Zimbabwe, it's very difficult for those poor kids. And even in Mozambique, because they're being double charged. Who protect them? Where must they go? Because from our side, they do have every document which from their disposals. But when they go the other side, it's very difficult. To an extent, it is alleged that If you give somebody like this police the border, you must know that police, because if you don't go down and follow him, those documents, they disappear in their hands like this. So how do we protect our own people? Because it formed part of the agreements which have been signed in the SADC protocol and in the entire Africa. Because you even indicated about the issue of commerce and the like. But charity begins where? At home. We must start to rectify the SADC before we go to commerce and other parts. It's very difficult for these poor drivers. I'll rest my case. I'll come to the second one. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you also for the presentation. Mr. Kumalo, congratulations to your staff and team for the hat-trick in clean audit. We've also for the 21st birthday, it seems, which is next year, which might just suggest a good occasion to celebrate. And whilst it's election next year and we might not all be back, I must also mention that it's a good idea to have a 20th birthday instead of a 21st. Nevertheless, a bit sad to, in contrast, have the experience of the remarks which Mr. Ramete made as the chairman of the board. And I must say, it takes a lot of guts to come at the end of the term and say, in reflection of what we were there for, we don't all feel successful, if I can extract that as a statement of the gist of your message. But maybe there's a bit more into what you want to say, and maybe there's a stronger message or a message of a particular kind. I do pick up that there might be a detachment and a bit of a misalignment in terms of how you might have experienced your role as an accounting authority in relation to what your objectives might have been or your goals might have been or what you wanted to do, and then in reflecting back, you know, you find this sort of an imbalance. Leaving that there, I want to ask your comments on particular notes, note 24, where there's a remark around the 2014 litigation process and the whole thing around the 2014 permit tariffs regulations and the fact that you oppose those regulations. Because you're opposing the setting aside of those regulations, which makes sense in terms of your position. But then, you know, once those judgments are made, it comes at a cost. So obviously it's very difficult to budget for things like this. And if it happens, it's very bad for your whole financial planning side of things. But then again, it also then affects your financial performance standard in light of the three audits that you managed to attain now. So what provision or what mechanism do you have in place? Is there a conversation with other entities around this? In what way do you make provision for this? And all around note 24 in the AG report. Then note 25 in the AG report, where the remark is made, I can recall also our concerns and the questions that we had around RTMC that took over particular functions, and in general, how is that going? I'm also not quite sure how far and whether the Border Authority Act has been approved, but that is another threat to your function. At the time, it didn't make sense to pass a function and a role to RTMC. So how is that going? Was it a good idea? Was it a bad idea? Is it a type of contract or agreement with the exit clause? Was it under a particular term so that you could test it and maybe get the function back? So if you could just reflect on the experience and the whole environment that you find yourself in, also in terms of the role of the future Border Management Act. Then in terms of note 31 of the AG report, there was a provision in terms of the refund of claims of 164 million, which relates to the Prescriptions Act, which is a very old act, Act 68 of 1969. And then my next point is around your compliance and the fact that it was regarded as not as important to put your clean audit in detriment, which I think you could be happy with, but the constitutional aspect of accounting authority, particularly Section 5, sub 2, around the fact that CBRT needs two members with technical knowledge on passenger transport, cross-border, and then also two members of flight or two experts that would have experience in cross-border road transport in terms of flight. And currently you don't have that expertise on your board. So, you know, to what extent is this then communicated? To what extent does that affect the fact that you should be a capacitated accounting authority? Then in from pages 24 to 45, there's a whole list of and a whole discussion of under and over achievement of targets. So could you just in terms of an approach for formulating the targets for the next financial year, give us an idea of your approach and how you view these, since there are sort of major under and over achievements of those targets, and I would imagine that you might want to approach this in a different way for the next financial year. Then I received some information, and you might recall my email which I sent you around appointments and qualifications. I also approached the minister about these, and that there's all sorts of allegations around appointments and people being appointed in different positions for consecutive number of years without appropriate qualifications. Where's HR in all of this? And where's the board in all of this? In being a filter and to make sure that firstly people are appointed and that they are appropriately appointed and that they fulfill the requirements for these positions. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you, presenters. Thank you, CBRTA. Let me first start by saying the CEO has been strategic enough to remind us about their mandate. He has reminded us about their mandate. That has resulted in me teasing out the other questions that I was to ask, because he clearly stated out that there are many role players at the borders there, and theirs is to give permits, also licensing. But my concern is that they are giving permits even to buses and taxis who are bringing a large number of people to the country. The activity which may is affecting our economy negatively, that may in the next years make our economy to collapse, because if we have so many people that are not recorded or coming in legally, because as a country we are forced to provide basic services legally to those people who have come illegally. That's my worry. An example would be what I saw in the media, in the print media, that there was a truck in KZN that was found there ferrying close to 100 foreign nationals. There was a situation like that in the media out there. And I have a very big concern to say, how did it happen? There can be players in the borders who are there on a get-rich-quick scheme there. But yours is not to say not to penalize the other partner, because you are all there at an equal level. But you said to us you also play an advisory role to the minister. What is the response of the minister to things that need his or her immediate attention, let alone the fact that you have had three ministers in one term, let alone that, but what is your, how far does your influence go when you try to advise the minister on such matters? On your employment statistics, you highlighted that you are at 42 women representation in senior management. I am tempted not to penalize you or criticize, but to encourage you to do more. It means you can. Now that you are there, it means you can do more. Coming to the expenditure pie chart that reflects 56% on operational costs, is it ideal that it's on 56? I don't want to criticize, but to get information that it is ideal that you are at 56 on compensation of employees and you are less than 50% on operational costs. Coming to what was said by the board chairperson in his closing remarks, what is not in the presentation, I'll just have to advise the committee to prioritize the matter, maybe come closer, because if the board, instead of playing oversight, they are interfering with the operations, that is something else. If there's not enough number of board members, that is something that needs the immediate attention of the minister. But as a committee, there is a role that we have to play around that. My other take would be around the issue of what you said, that you are technically insolvent. What strategy do you have to come out of that bracket? What's your strategy? Because even last year, you reported as such. At least you can give us light so that we leave you, because we're about to start writing our legacy report now. This is coming up to the last year of our term. So you can give us so that we are able to put it in black and white in our legacy report. But Chair, I think the issue of a single border management authority is the right way to go, so that there isn't this, that there's too many of us. If there's too many role players, there will be a lot of confusion. And it is said our borders are so porous. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, honorable members, Chairperson, CEO, and your team. Members would like to hear responses.
Thank you, Chairperson. If I may deal with the part that I presented, especially around the board, the first thing that we need to differentiate between is the vacancies on the board and the performance of the current members of the board. we who are there at the moment. Those are two separate issues. Although one might have a small influence, but it's speculative to say, if we had the other four members who are not on the board at the moment, the situation would be different, because people influence each other. You know, I did not want to go into the details of this matter, but the fact is, we, the currently serving board members, are failing in our responsibilities. That is according to me, and I would have opted to, you know, I've taken steps before. Initially, when I started, I attributed this to us being new on the board and used that as an excuse. I've written to the board members, but I found myself, you know, having to virtually sit in court, not in the court of law, but, you know, being accused when I said, we are not doing A, B, C, and D. Can we please read our submissions? Can we please come to the board prepared? Can we please, you know, do things like stop playing on our phones during board meetings? Unfortunately, I don't have any sanctions that I can apply against board members. Board members do attend meetings intermittently. Sometimes a board member will come for the earlier part and then request to be excused, unless if they got their own matter, which will be diverting the board from its work. Or a board member will ask to leave earlier. And if you look at our legislation, I can only take action if a board member misses two consecutive meetings. But remember, it's not only board meetings, there are also committee meetings. But most importantly is being in a meeting and contributing, or, you know, understanding where we are or what we are working on. I can say here that I got only one board member, who is also the deputy chairperson, unfortunately, who make an effort to read submissions. And the reason why I focus this on the finances, I would not want to talk about the people's characters, because I'm not an expert on that. But if a board member, within 3 months, we talk about the same subject matter, I'll take, for instance, Friday's meeting. Before that, I wrote to board members regarding the very Section 5, who can appoint a CEO, or who does appoint a CEO of CBRTA. And I quoted the Act and even detailed it. A month later or so, the CEO made a similar presentation on exactly the same Section 5. On the 10th of September, the deputy minister, acting on a proxy from the minister at our AGM, went in detail into the appointment of the CEO of the board. But on Friday this week, when I was trying to deflect an attempt to put the CEO on suspension, I'm sorry, the minister is not even aware of this, all I could afford is a stay of execution, so to say, because the board had resolved by majority vote. I had to invoke Section 5 in that meeting. And board members are still saying, does Section 5 say that? I haven't read it. And now we are towards the end of our third year on that board. I only became chairman in November 2016. Yeah. That's when I started. So if we are there, you know, you, chairperson, you can make your own conclusion. But remember, it's only in a space of 3 months. When this matter comes raised for the fourth time, I still don't know what it means. Then I don't know where the problem is, Chair. And that is the problem that I have, that really when you go to a CBRTA board meeting, you know, the only thing that I got to prepare myself to do is to make sure that eventually the submissions are passed, or whatever I get to sign at the end of the day, because I will be attacked personally, you know, in an attempt to divert the attention of the meeting. So to say that from my position, I can say that I do proper oversight. It will be false. Because in a situation like that where your focus is just, we need to submit the financial statement to the AG, you know. Even though I've read the financial statement, I've satisfied myself as much as I can, and the deputy chair has read the financial statement, but you miss the contribution of other board members. And when your own board members say, stand there and say, they don't even want the financial statement to be put or the submission to be discussed at all, because they claim they didn't have time to prepare themselves or read the financial statements, you know, and you fight to get the submission on, you know, and they go through all this and they still objected to the submission of the financial statement, the draft financial statement to the Auditor General. How those things went through, I don't know what trick I pulled, and I'm running out of tricks. That's why I said my time is coming to an end, either by the normal process, which will be March next year, but I may leave earlier because one is tired. Thank you, Chair.
CEO.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will try and avoid the issues that the Chairperson has dealt with and just focus on the presentation matters, Chair. I think just to start with the issue that is raised by Honorable Ramatlakane on the Free State Lesotho matter. Honorable Ramatlakane, it is sad to say the Free State Lesotho matter remains unresolved. We have produced, like you correctly say, a document where we articulated the way forward on this matter. But as you'd remember, sir, this was pre the midnight reshuffle. And post the midnight reshuffle, we've lost traction on this matter. We have attempted, and in fact, there was a meeting that was attended by this portfolio committee with the Minister of Transport in Pretoria, where we tried to resuscitate the status of this matter. And we promised at that meeting that the minister would endeavor to meet with his counterpart in Free State with a view to restoring sanity on this matter. There's been a few follow-up meetings, but as of now, my understanding is that that meeting hasn't taken place. Last week, Monday, we met as officials with our Free State counterparts because there's been a whole new suite of officials in Free State. So there's a new HOD, there's a new chief director, so we're dealing with completely new people. So the workshop of last week Monday was to educate them about the background to this matter, to get all of us to be on the same page, because before we can resolve this problem, they first need to understand the nature of the problem. So at a technical level, I believe we've achieved some milestones, but unfortunately the nature of this problem is such that it needs to be resolved at a higher level, because it is a matter, in my view, that is beyond technical. The Act is very clear what is a cross-border vehicle, what is a cross-border movement, how it ought to be conducted. Point A must be in country A, point B must be in country B. The reality of what is taking place on the ground in Free State is that there's still no normal cross-border passenger movements. The problems are on both sides, and we have never shied away from saying that. There are issues where Lesotho needs to come to the party. There's issues on which, as a country, we also need to come to the party. But we all need to be honest in facing this matter, and where we are culpable, admit to our culpability, and where the other party is culpable, demonstrate that they are culpable, so that together we find a lasting solution to it. It's a very painful matter insofar as it affects those who are supposed to be legitimate holders of cross-border permits, those taxi operators who are legitimate holders of cross-border permits but who are unable to ply their trade, notwithstanding the fact that they hold a permit, continue to be hamstrung and are unable to enjoy their businesses or to have thriving businesses because they are not able to conduct normal operations there. But that, long and short, say that matter remains unresolved. Timetable on border fixing, on board fixing and related challenges. I think DOT is best placed to respond to this, so I will not delve into that. Problems of vacancies on the board. Yes, the vacancies on the board are effectively rendering the decisions taken by that board, because we are a quasi-judicial body that makes determination on who gets to have a permit to do business versus who doesn't. And insofar as that is built into our Act, and we don't have the necessary expertise and competences on the board, the decisions taken by that regulatory committee are subject to challenge in court and can be reviewed. And we continue to work with that vulnerability where it just needs to take one clever person who knows how to go about getting these matters to be reviewed to come and undermine or even reverse a lot of decisions taken by this board over the last 12 months or even 18 months when this board has not been properly constituted. These matters have been aired, these matters have been communicated with our counterparts at the DOT. We've written countless letters, I can count no less than 6 letters that are dealing with this matter, requesting for urgent assistance, but up to now we haven't moved on this matter, unfortunately. The letter wrote, the chairperson wrote a letter on the 18th of March, and this one, because I was copied on that letter, I can talk about that letter with authority. In that letter, the chairperson detailed all the challenges that he's having with his board. He even detailed the issue that the board, instead, I think one of the phrases he uses in that letter is to say, the CBRTA is successful despite the board, not because of the board. And the tone of that letter is such that it should have alarmed anyone who read that letter because it details the issues as they are. But unfortunately, since that time till now, there's been no intervention. It's a miracle that we're still standing, some of us, with the level of attacks that we experience on that board, where the board's focus is on personal attacks rather than on the work that they are appointed to do. It's a day-to-day. Every single board meeting is a pain. We are unable to focus on the work at hand. The issue of tariffs, you are correct in saying that the board needs to recommend to the minister what is the basis of tariff reviews, and we have been doing this for the last 3 years. For the last 3 years, we've been submitting tariff revision proposals, and each of those has been well motivated and founded on a costing model that is sound. But unfortunately, when it gets to the DOT side, the promulgation responsibility, then is taken over by the legal section within the department, which must promulgate these as regulations. Again, I think a big part of the problem has been with these constant changes of ministers of transport. Because there was a meeting of consultation meeting where the previous minister of transport had effectively signed off on the regulations, and it was just left to the officials to go and implement. Unfortunately, within days thereafter, that minister was no longer minister and the officials were no longer prepared to carry on doing what had been agreed to at that meeting. So part of the challenge, unfortunately, sir, is these changes have had a huge effect on us. Coming back to the issue of the continent and the consistency, I think it's also an issue you raised, sir. Indeed, South African operators in SADC are subjected to an unbalanced playing field. All our counterparts charge cross-border fees for the use of their road and the damage you cause on their infrastructure. When this was introduced back in 1998, the argument that would be used by our counterparts was that we have toll roads. And at the time, most of the SADC countries did not have toll roads. And they would say, but South Africa, you've tolled your roads and we pay the toll fees. So when you come to our site, you pay the cross-border user charge. But subsequent to that, sir, 20 years down the line, every single country in SADC has got a tolled roads as well. So South African operators not only pay for tolled roads in South Africa, they also pay a cross-border fee when they move to the other country, Zimbabwe for argument's sake, and still pay for the tolled roads in Zimbabwe. So indeed, it's not a level playing field, and it is established as an entity, amongst others, to create conditions of fair competitive play for South African operators, whether you are a passenger operator or you are a freight operator. So the important achievement with the establishment of the Cross-Border Road Transport Regulators Forum is that we now have a platform where we can talk peer-to-peer about these issues and these injustices. But this still does not absolve us as a country or take the responsibility away from us as a country of creating measures of reciprocity to ensure that those who are unfair to our operators on the other side of the border are meted with the same treatment. And these principles are built into the SADC protocol on transport communications and metrology. So it is anticipated that when two countries can't cooperate, or when one country treats the other country unfairly, that country can reciprocate by subjecting people coming from that country to the same treatment. Again, it's an issue that we've been pushing, we've been passionately fighting over this matter. You'd know that at every single appearance we've made at this committee, we've been asking and appealing for the support of the committee to assist us to get these legislative changes to be put in place so that we can create a balanced playing field for South African operators. Unfortunately, as of today, that reality remains. We still haven't achieved that level playing field for South African operators. We appreciate the compliments in respect to the third clean audit, Chair. But I need to say, Mr. Ramatlakane, that we are lucky that we've been able to hang on in there. And it's a matter of time before we break. So, honestly, we are appealing for assistance and support because there's a lot of other factors at play. There's a lot of political agendas at play that are not informed by substance or anything, but by the wish to undo the good work that we've put together and the level at which we've placed that agency to undo that. There's people who are very determined to achieve that, and given a chance, they will achieve it. And from the looks of it, we're vulnerable as things stand at the moment. Coming to the issues raised by Honorable Sibande, Indicator 8 talks to the workshop we had on the SADC protocol on transport communications and metrology. And he's correct that, I think, is Honorable Sibande in the room? Okay. He's correct to say that some of our counterparts are having financial challenges, and therefore, sometimes when we commit to things, not out of not wanting to, but due to limited financial capacity, some of our counterparts struggle to actually meet their obligations as articulated in that protocol. But we've also found that sometimes it's just an excuse to use the money as a reason for not complying because it suits those countries not to play along, especially where they stand to lose revenue. And this is where reciprocity would assist us because we'll then say, regardless of your reasons for not complying with the provisions of the protocol, you oblige us as a country to also reciprocate. And that, in my view, would move us faster to achieving a balanced playing field. And then the Honorable Sibande also raises the issue of the breakdown of management. Indeed, we've shown the structures at both senior management and we haven't isolated top management. The reality is that as things stand at top management at the moment, we have three executives who are female and we have five executives who are male. But you'd remember that just a year ago we had a 50-50 split. And unfortunately, when you lose people, you are not always, it's very difficult to maintain that 50-50 split. We came here and boasted about having achieved 50% female representation at executive level, and unfortunately we then lost two of those females, and unfortunately when we replaced them, we couldn't find suitable females, so we replaced them with males. So it's a very difficult thing to continue to chase, but at the same time, you also need to say to yourself, at the end of the day, is that your primary objective or sustaining your ability to perform at a particular level? So it's a balancing act. And unfortunately, we're not sitting at 50% that we're sitting at just more than a year ago when we last reported on this. You also asked about the case that we've lost. We did lose a case at Constitutional Court pertaining to the 2011 regulations. Those were actually nullified by the court, which meant that all the operators who had been charged on the basis of those 2011 regulations had to be refunded. We then were settled with a debt of 318 million that we needed to pay back to operators who had been charged on the basis of these 2011 regulations that had been set aside by the court. So between 2011 and 2014, there was that lacuna, and because of that lacuna, we ended up with this 318 million. Like I said, we've been servicing this debt. roughly half of the operators that were roughly half of that money was paid back to the operators, those who came to claim their monies. But not all the operators came to claim their monies, because when you come and claim, you must also have the necessary financial systems and be able to produce the documents. So those who were not able to come and claim, and those who did not come and raise their debt with us, then the prescription provisions of the Prescription Act apply as of May this year, which then means that that balance that we're supposed to pay, we are no longer required to pay by law, because that amount has prescribed, which saves us from a point of view of a solvency situation, because we're insolvent because our liabilities exceeded our revenue and exceeded our assets. We were then saved by this, and it has put us back to a liquidity situation, as the CFO has explained. You've made reference to the Kwanganase situation in KZN, stroke Mpumalanga, and the same thing applies also to the north of KZN before you cross to the borders. We're talking about the issue of vehicle theft. Indeed, it's a huge issue. It's an issue that is actually alarming, because you find that even senior officials, there's evidence of senior officials in Mozambique who are driving vehicles that have been stolen in South Africa, which is a sad reality, and it's probably not a diplomatic thing to say, but it's a reality. And this issue is being attended to by the competent authority with the South Africa, which is the South African Police Services. We've done briefings through the necessary structures with Minister of Police, and the Minister of Police has got all the knowledge that we have in this regard. But unfortunately, this issue is outside of the competency of the cross-border road transport agents. We are not a law enforcement entity. We don't have authority to arrest people who are stealing cars or who are hijacking cars. Ours is to facilitate the efficient movement of people and goods across our borders with a view to promoting trade, which is why when I articulated at the beginning of my presentation, I actually went to this explanation of what our mandate is, who are the other players, and what are they responsible for at the border environment. So yes, we work in collaboration with other partners, but unfortunately some of these matters fall outside of our mandate or even our capacity to resolve them. So yes, those problems are there, but they are being responded to and dealt with by the competent authorities. Ours is to collaborate and support them with the information we have, but we don't have authority to actually correct that situation in those environments. The issue of board vacancies, indeed it is a contributory factor insofar as the board not being able to discharge its responsibilities in accordance with the prescripts of the Act. And I agree with you that that matter. But it's different from the issues that the chairperson is raising, which also speak to even those who are there not being able to do their work in accordance with what is expected from board members who are there to provide support and guidance. The issue of the PFMA, that observation again is correct, that the board is in fact an accounting authority in our environment, and so those issues, I don't think I want to comment further on them, but just to say your observations in regard to those issues are correct. The litigation against the 2014 tariffs is still not concluded, you are correct. There is no problem here, except that the matter has not set in court. The court must make a determination, and we are advised that this matter will sit down on the 3rd of December, and hopefully the court will articulate itself on this matter, which will either put this thing to rest, if the court rules in our favor, or it will actually mean the contingent liability that we've had then becomes an active liability if the court rules against us. So there's nothing we're trying to hide there, but to say that this matter is pending, and courts sometimes take a long time to attend to a matter, and this is one such case where the matter has been lying around, nothing happening to it since 2014 till now. The cross-border calculator, the intention of the cross-border calculator is to enable us to be able to assess the costs associated with the delays. So it's to link the delays and to be able to then say, these delays, what is the cost associated with these delays? If, for instance, a truck is delayed for 2-3 hours at a border environment, what does that translate to in terms of the competitiveness of the cargo that is carried by that? So that we're able to demonstrate to each other, again, having an environment where we have 8 players or different entities that have a role to play in the border environment, and not all of us applying ourselves to these matters from a point of view of assessing the economic impact of these delays. The cross-border calculator is aimed at serving as a tool that will enable us to enlighten one another around the impact of these delays on the competitiveness of our goods, and therefore the direct effect it has on the economic performance of South Africa as a country. The issue of Lesotho not being able to issue electronic permits, even now Lesotho still issues handwritten permits. Unfortunately, there is no law that says they cannot do that. They don't have the necessary technology, they don't have the necessary financial muscle to put in place a system that will put them in a position where they can issue electronic permits like we do. We had offered them the use of eNetis, and that issue has also been a ball that has been thrown around, largely also because of constant changes of ministers of transport within Lesotho. So even though South Africa had offered for free that we could actually make available our own system that they could use, and we would actually help them to set it up in their environment, that hasn't realized up to now. The KPI that has not been achieved is the one of implementing cross-border charges as an additional revenue stream. But you're correct that we're not only chasing this because it's an additional revenue stream for us, but it's also a mechanism for us to balance the playing field to ensure that South African operators are not subjected to onerous conditions where they need to pay for the use of the roads in other countries when their counterparts don't have to pay for the use of the roads in our environment. So in the main, it's actually addressing that strategic issue of creating a balanced playing field for South African operators. And then coming to observations by Honorable Singh, we appreciate again the compliments in respect to the clean audit. And I think the chairperson has tried to articulate further on his own issues, and I'm best placed not to be the one who talk about those issues. But let me go to the issue raised around Note 24 on the remark around the 2014 litigation. The odds of us winning this matter or not winning it, it's very difficult to say, except to say that in our view, the challenge is not founded on a solid basis of saying the board was not properly constituted. We refute that allegation that the board at the time when those tariffs regulations were actually promulgated was not properly constituted, or the fact that the argument where it is questioned the consultation that took place between the then Minister of Transport and the board. So we are actually still standing on our ground, and we believe that we have a fairly good case in this regard. And that's all we can say, unfortunately. Only the court will be able to articulate whether our assumption is correct or not. What provisions do we have in place in the event that we have an adverse effect on this? We actually don't. We have provided for this as a contingent liability, but the reality is it will put us in a state of technical insolvency, because there is no other revenue stream either than the permit. We are a single a revenue stream organization. We don't get any allowance or allocation from National Treasury. We're totally a self-funding organization, as you know. So there is nothing else that we have at the moment, and we would be lying if we were to pretend otherwise. The issue of the takeover of RTI by the RTMC, how is it going? It's going very well, except that the monitoring and evaluation thereof from a performance point of view, we still need to tighten our service level agreement. We have an arrangement of a principal agency relationship where the RTMC performs or executes this function on our behalf. But at the end, this function remains a responsibility of the CBRTA in terms of the CBRTA mandate. What needs to be cleaned up is that the Act needs to be cleaned up so that either this function gets transferred as a mandate responsibility of the RTMC, or if the minister has got a different view, then we could look into how else to address this. But let's remember that at the time when the decision was taken, it was to assist the CBRTA to alleviate the costs, because the CBRTA could no longer afford to retain RTI, given the fact that we are an organization that finances its own operations from permit fees. So when this decision was taken, it was with a view to reduce the financial burden on the CBRTA by having this particular responsibility taken by our sister agency, which is the RTMC. The BMA is not a threat to the CBRTA, and Chair, I've tried to explain this before. The BMA is supposed to play a role of looking after the border environment. It's going to be the landlord that looks after the border environment. It's not a transport authority. It's not an authority responsible for the flows of transport, either passenger or freight. We are a regulator of cross-border operators. BMA is supposed to be the landlord over the border post, the border environment. So what the BMA is being proposed to come and do and what we do are not related whatsoever in any form or shape. In fact, we would welcome the establishment of the BMA because it will give us a single authority to engage with, as opposed to a current situation where you need to interact with at least 8 role players in a border environment to get any decision taken. So from where we're sitting, if the BMA were to see light of day, it will benefit us enormously because all of a sudden we will all know who is accountable. Look at the airport situation. You have the same players roughly in an airport environment, but we all know that when it comes to the performance of an airport, there is one authority that you hold responsible if the airport doesn't perform according, which is the Airports Company of South Africa. So the BMA will give us something equivalent in the land border posts. It will become the authority that is responsible for the performance of the border post, but it will not take any of our responsibilities, and it's not even looking at the type of issues that we are responsible for. It's not what it's intended to be. There's issue about note 31. I'm not sure of the notes. I don't know if CFO, you want to assist me on this one. I'm not sure what the question was here.
Note 31 is concerning the prescription on the 164 million. So here all what we are doing is an accounting process. We are saying this prescription was not in the financial year and therefore it was not affected in the face of the financials, but it's coming as a note. So we are saying to the users of financial statements, take note that after year end, but before the publication of the financials, there's a matter that arose that needed to be made to the attention of the users. Hence, we are recording there the events after balance sheet date.
And then the one on the constitutional aspect around board composition. Indeed, it is correct that the Act prescribes that you will have 2 freight transport experts on the board of the CBRTA, 2 passenger transport experts on the board of the CBRTA. Currently, both those roles are vacant, and we do not have those people. And it is an issue that we've already articulated on in the presentation. And to the extent that we don't have that expertise, we are vulnerable insofar as the possibility of decisions taken by the regulatory committee being subjected to a review. And I think Dr. Mayapan also asked you to deal with pages 24 to 45 over the issue of over or under achievement of targets. I'm not sure what the issues are there.
The only target that was not achieved is in relation to the cross-border charges. Now, what we have done with the cross-border charges, obviously, one of the issues that came in the audit is around the smartness of the indicator, because remember, it must meet the smart, it must be smart, meaning that it must also be within our control, and to the extent that it's also dependent on others, then it creates a problem. And what we have done, we are still chasing it because it's important for us, it's important for the operators, South African operators, so we're still chasing it at an operational level, but it's no longer part of the APP per se, and that's how we have approached and changed our approach.
And Honorable Singh, you also raised the issue of appointments and qualifications, and you referred to a letter you wrote to us. One of the things we did to demonstrate transparency on this issue, it was during our audit when your letter came. We actually gave this letter even to the Auditor General, and they went to do an even more detailed, they went way beyond their sample because there was an investigation following the allegations of these apparent people who were appointed to the CBRTA without qualifications. And they went in, they did a thorough review. You can actually check with the Auditor General's office. And they were unable to establish any of these allegations. So not every allegation that gets to be made for whatever reason is true. And not every allegation must be assumed to be true just because someone has alleged. There's a lot of disgruntled people or people who have an axe to grind with other people who go about peddling lies that have no foundation or fact. But these matters were subjected to a thorough and a detailed investigation independent of ourselves, and nothing of the sort was established. So just to give you the reassurance, we do not appoint people without qualifications at CBRTA. In fact, we pride ourselves on having very competent people at CBRTA. Honorable Clark, the mandate of the CBRTA, you are absolutely correct, that there are many other role players, and it's important for us to constantly keep this in mind, because there's always an assumption that because we are in that environment, we are responsible for all problems experienced in that environment. The reality is that we're just one of the small players in the border environment, and our role is actually very minuscule vis-a-vis some of the bigger players in that environment. And our role is really the flow of transport, expedited flow of passenger and freight movements, and to ensure that we reduce delays and ensure that there are no unnecessary constraints that delay the movement of trucks, buses, and taxis across that border, especially those that we regulate. So the issue of foreign nationals coming into South Africa, it's generally not people who come through our vehicles. People who come through cross-border vehicles are your legitimate migrant workers who work in South Africa, or legitimate people who actually come to South Africa but who are documented. You have this issue phenomenon of human trafficking, where we sometimes find when we go and do inspections ourselves, inside tankers, a tanker is this round thing that normally would carry petrol. And then you open this thing, you find that at the bottom of this thing, they've stashed people there. And these are the people that come into South Africa illegally, that come, and they don't come through vehicles that cross-border regulates, but they come through illegal means, and that's what is called human trafficking. And unfortunately, that responsibility, again, falls outside of our mandate. So insofar as when we find these people, we hand them over to the police, who then process the border police, whose responsibility is to make sure that they maintain the integrity of our borders and avoid a situation where our borders are porous and all sorts of either illicit goods coming to our country illegally, like the cigarettes. There's a lot of illegal cigarettes coming from Zimbabwe that comes to South Africa, and our scanners are currently not working, thanks to SARS that has decided to disable their scanners for whatever reason. But I'm not going to talk about mandates of other entities. Ours is really to ensure that those who are legitimate, who carry passports, who either work in South Africa in our mines, who are actually not responsible for bringing our economy down, but who are the people who actually dig up the gold, the platinum, that we then sell and export as a country, are able to be transported in conditions of safety and reasonable dignity in those vehicles that are actually suitably qualified. So that's the part where we play a role. And insofar as the goods are concerned, we are again concerned with legitimate goods, where people who pay their customs duties and so on, who are either exporting things through our ports, or things that coming from South Africa that we sell. There's a lot of supermarkets in the region that are sustained by goods produced in South Africa by South African companies, and those things are actually transported by trucks into those countries. All those things have a positive spin-off in our economy, and which is why we're interested in those trucks needing to flow as freely as possible without hindrance, so that to the extent that we sell those goods, we derive that revenue, we propped our economy, and we have a country that is functional. So that's the part where we play a role. Yes, there is a challenge we have with a lot of illegal immigrants coming to South Africa, and we're also even having a situation of illegal immigrants employed by South African logistics companies who do not want to comply with the regulations of our own laws. And we need to have those engagements, but we need to have them with the relevant authorities who can assist us. And there was this meeting that was, for instance, convened in KwaZulu-Natal by the Premier of that province with four ministers. And what was good about that meeting is that a task team then emerged out of that meeting involving four government departments, which enabled us as a task team to then have broader mandates than just one department, because when you're working with the police there, you are also able to then look after the mandate of the police. You have Home Affairs, you look after the mandate of Home Affairs and Labour, with a view to protecting the employment situation of South African drivers, because indeed driving a truck is not a scarce skill. And any South African can be trained to drive a truck, and therefore there's no excuse for a company to go and employ Zambians and Zimbabweans at the expense of South Africans when there's a lot of South Africans who are currently unemployed. And that task team is dealing with that, and I think we're registering good progress there. So I just want to agree with the observations that indeed we do have these things, but those are in the main outside of the scope of the of the CBRTA. The issue of, I think you also made the issue of compensation, 56% of, remember that we are a regulator. And as a regulator, the standard is that you should not exceed 70%. You should not exceed 70% of your revenue going to personnel costs. We're currently sitting at way below that. So we're not at risk of spending too much on personnel costs at the expense of goods and services. We think our balance and our ratios are quite good. And those things we monitor very, very carefully and very closely. I hope and I agree with you that a single border authority will be actually a very good thing for all of us, because we will then have a single authority that we hold responsible over the going-ons in the border. Currently, the responsibility gets parceled from one to another. No one wants to take ownership of the overall responsibility over the integrity of our borders. I thank you, ma'am.
Thank you very much. Honorable Ramatlakana, you wanted to say something? Honorable Shalem? Hi, Duma Yasamaya, you could tell.
No, thank you, Chairperson. Anyway, the last question, I mean, he was answering are the ones that, I mean, I was looking at. Because, you know, even now, when you look, I mean, inside the country, you'll find some people, why you are here, they say, no, I came here as a refugee. You know, all those things are not clear, how it, but the answers that you have given now, well, we're addressing some of those issues when it comes to the crossing of the border unlawfully. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Sibande, you'll be the last one.
No, Chair, the explanation of the Group CEO or CEO, it worries me, including the explanation of the chair in explaining the challenge. I thought before I come in, I needed to hear what is the representative of the Department of Transport saying, specifically around the issues of the board. And the fact that it is not in compliance with the Act. Because I do want to make a firm proposal on how this matter is dealt with. That it is presented to this committee today during this process, we can't pretend it wasn't presented. So we can't look away from it. We would have to say something, otherwise we would be failing in the words of the Auditor General when they come to the issues about oversight. So I don't know, Chair, if I proceed or you want to intervene for the department.
Let's hear the department first. What is the COO?
Yeah, the COO is not here.
Okay. I wanted him to hear this because he's the master of all I survey. And I'm surprised that he has left. Mombasa Dar, Bicha COO Abu Ramata, he must come and respond. Continue responding. I know you are up to the task. You know the subject matter.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. Honorable members, good afternoon. I'm not starting with a disclaimer. I'm just starting with a comment. You know, I'm not a board member for the department at Cross Border. I'm not a responsible line function for MNE, and I've been hearing all the discussions here, but I've seen you've got three clean audits. Wow, that's what I can say.
The honorable member?
Yeah, no, I hear that response, so there would not be a response, because not line function, not the representative on the board, that means the issues are new. So you would be saying something that is only your views, which is not necessarily in keeping what we're discussing. So I don't think that comment then will help. With respect, you were just saying your views, because you started immediately with this claim that you are not this, you are not that. So that disqualify that response. But Chair, now if you agree, I wanted to make a proposal on this.
Go ahead, Honorable.
On this question. The fact that we are now in this place at this time, and I think we were in fact assured. We had raised the issue with the minister, and we have convened the meeting, special meeting, to look at all the boards and all the vacancies. And I must add, it was some time back when that happened. We were reassured that all of these matters are not going to get into the red. Otherwise, I'm not going to be able to cross into the difficult situation where you have a board that's not correcting or the board that has this. But the stark reality now that you are putting before the board is that it's not only that it's the vacancy, it's not in compliance with the Act. So it's in violation, maybe if I put differently, is in violation of the Act, and you are proceeding with it as if it's in compliance with the Act. We can't pretend that we have not put that in front of us. And therefore, the proposal is that at least this committee takes a special resolution on this particular question of the board, particularly with respect to the non-compliance of it in terms of legislation, and that it is reported as part of this process that we're embarking upon. So in other words, we're going to have a special resolution and attachment of the special resolution in our report of this. This matter require urgent intervention. Like actually it's a matter of to be dealt with overnight. It's a matter that requires us, like, by tomorrow, when we wake up, this anomaly is addressed. It's addressed. You have your people that understand the Act, because in any case, this is not like full time. They have a scheduled meeting in per annum, maybe four times a year. But the effect of the gap is beyond comprehension, actually. So that's why I want to propose, Chair, that we make a special resolution, and I think that the validity can also help us in terms of remembering. But this matter can't be lingering. So for me, is that we ask in that special resolution that the minister pay urgent attention and close the gap of board that is functioning not in compliance with the Act. Actually, King Code is also very, very strong around that particular question. And that matter is actually sorted within 48 hours. It's a matter that should have been sorted out. If I listen to the 18th of March, a detail, maybe we should also finish the committee with the letter, so we can see for ourselves, not speaking out of term of the letter, finish out the committee with the letter so we can see indeed what is being said. And it's beyond comprehension that action has not been taken. Now we're asking, in terms of our oversight, that particular action should be taken, and it requires really speedy turnaround on it. I mean, I don't know whether the doctor, good doctor, is gone.
He must come back, because he must come and give us indication as to what exactly is happening. I've indicated to the ambassador that the good doctor must come back.
Yeah, no, Chair, I just think that maybe let me leave it there. But this is a formal proposal I'm making, that we should take that special resolution, and then that the minister, he sent that resolution. It's acted on that resolution without delay. I mean, what we are talking about here, even those that are defaulters are seeing this discussion. They know now that your board is non-compliant. you need to be convening a board, you need to be condoning, you need to be rectifying all of the decisions that you have taken with the non-compliant board, with a compliant board. Otherwise, you have no decision. So I'm sorry to say. So, thank you, Chair.
Honourable members, can we agree that we have this special resolution that will go to the minister within 48 hours? The secretariat will be able to draft that, and then we can start with it tomorrow before we engage into other things, so that it can speedily go to the attention of the minister. Can we agree to that? Thank you, honourable members. You are still, you finalised your questions. I think it's very important that also impress upon your DG, who is the acting DDG, acting DG, that whenever we are here, we mean business, and therefore we would expect the incumbent who is sitting in this entity to be able to account, because tomorrow we should hold that person accountable in view of the fact that this is what he or she has said to us. And therefore, when things are not happening, we are able to say, but account as to what were the processes which were followed, what exactly, where have you arrived, and then we can be able to move forward. It's a pity that we have to deal with the situation the way it is, because we were of the opinion that by now all the boards who have been found wanting, we were told in the first quarter of this year, on the arrival of the minister, very excitedly so we were, that all the boards will be dealt with as speedily as possible. The latest will be in August. Now we're almost 3 months away from August, and now we find you in CBRTA limping, which is definitely a challenge to us, because our anticipation is just unfortunate. I was going through my documents. I can't find that presentation that the minister made of which are the boards which actually have got a normal board, which ones needs intervention, how is that intervention is going to be done. But as resolution has been taken, we will make sure that by close of business tomorrow, the minister receives, and within 48 hours, we expect the minister to have really complied, because then this means that even this report that has been presented before us, it's found wanting if there has been a challenge of the board that is correct. Thank you very much. It's always nice to have people who are streetwise. I just want to go quickly to CRBTA. The minister indicated that the appointment date for the new board will be in May. The advert was placed on the media on the 18th of February, and the closing date was the 5th of March, and the process of shortlisting, when he made a presentation, was saying the process of shortlisting will be starting soon. If the appointment was supposed to be in May, June, July, August, September, October, it's 5 months down the line, nothing has happened. And therefore, that is why it becomes very, very important. I don't want to go into the other boards, but was just wanting to indicate that this is what the minister has said to us, that by May, the board will be appointed, and therefore, we will have to hold him accountable for saying this to the portfolio committee and not living up to his words. Honorable Sibande, you are the next on the line of questions and discussions.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, there is a slightly issue which I wanted to request that you address it for us. In terms of your performance indicators, number 5. Yes, I agree that the percentage of temporary permits issued within predetermined turnaround times, you have achieved both of them. But Chairperson, to take you a little back, I want them to clarify us because we don't want to experience the very same mistake in future. But to take you a little bit back, if you recall very well, there was a serious problem around in the Free State, whereby the entity, when they give this, the province will give this, meaning that I'm not sure that up until this stage is that thing still happening, because that was the contribution factor of disorderly, whereby the center itself had some challenges. It was not controllable, meaning that the very same department we speaking bilingual, but what is the status quo at the moment? Because I'm scared whereby we can assume that everything is fine and nice. At the end, there are people who will come at the back and say, there are still outstanding temporary payments. So may you please take us on board in that regard.
CEO, Chairperson.
Yeah, Chairperson, Honorable Spande, unfortunately you were outside, I dealt with this matter, but I'll deal with it again. I have articulated that the issue of Free State Lesotho is still not resolved. I have also articulated that last week Monday, we met with the totally revamped new leadership of the Free State province. I'm sure you know there's a new HOD, there's a new chief director, everybody is new. And we're orientating them about this matter so that together we can work at finding a lasting and a permanent resolution to this matter. I've also said to the committee that unfortunately the resolution of this matter ultimately is not an administrative issue. In my view, it's a political issue, because we have laws that dictate this is what must happen, and we have a reality that is at odds with what the laws of this country are prescribing should happen in that environment. And whichever way you look at it, you can't say that the law of CBRTA is actually not the law of the South African government. It's an act of parliament passed by this parliament, and therefore we all need to comply with the prescripts of that unless we want to change it. And until that act has been changed, it prescribes that passenger transport, cross-border passenger transport, starts from country A and ends in country B. It doesn't start in country A and ends in country A. Then people walk across and take another vehicle in country B. So until we change that, we either change the act or we find compliance with the act as it stands, Lesotho will continue to hold us in violation of our own laws, but also in violation of the provisions of the Protocol on Transport, Communication and Metrology. And that issue unfortunately remains unresolved. And whichever way we choose to look at it, ours is just to implement, not to make laws, and the law that as a creature of statute we're supposed to be implementing suggests that this matter should be handled differently from the way it's currently handled in that environment. I think I'll confine myself to that.
Honourable members, are there still other things? I wanted to talk to the cross-border management agency, but you have clearly responded to that. But the question is, for how long are we going to be waiting and looking forward that the cross-border management agency is put in place? I saw it... Home Affairs, and subsequently there was the police dealing with it, and what are the tenets that needs to be put in place for the cross-border to really be functional. I don't need your answer anyway, but like we are indicating, as long as there's one umbrella body that can be able to deal with the critical issues which are happening in the borders, it definitely will go a long way to can deal with the challenges that are there. I was trying to get the governance, Ms. Dr. Shishi, to come and account from the ministry. Unfortunately, he is not here. Be that as it may, we have already taken a decision that we will hold the minister accountable, because the records are very clear that the board should have been reorganized by May. And we are 5 months down the line, the board has not been reorganized, and therefore it's an indictment on all of us, which we believe we should be able to say, probably, Minister, how do we now move forward? Assuming that you get an interdict from one person who can really decide that he is interdicting the financial statement and everything, it's a drawback. It definitely will be a drawback. Assuming that you get an interdict on any decisions that you have made as you're dealing with the challenges that are there, whose fault is that? It's not out of your own making that you'll be having this type of a thing. And Dr. Ramathi, your last word.
Chairperson, I can only thank yourself and your committee, and repeat the fact that every time we come here, we get educated, and we appreciate your criticisms and you know, the advices that you give us. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Continue with the good work, CEO and your team. Don't as yet resign, please, Ndate Ramathi. I know it's very frustrating and angering, but hang in there. We should be able to assist you. We will talk to the minister. We will make sure that at all costs something really happens. But we take pride in the fact that you, despite all those hiccups that you have indicated, you've got a clean audit, and really congratulations once more. And we hope you continue not only impacting positively on the South African freight, buses, taxis, but also make sure that you influence the 2063 agenda and make sure that you impact positively on the SADC countries, so that we are able to work and make sure that we do economic activities amongst ourselves without anybody being prejudiced, without other people believing that this one is a big brother, we can always tap and hamstrung. We all need the African economy, and in particular starting with SADC, to grow. We will go to all these other regions, but having knowing very well that we've got a base to fall back on, which is the SADC base, the South African agenda, and making sure that we live up to the ideal of the Agenda 2063 as proposed. On that note, the meeting is adjourned. Honorable members, 15 minutes break, and then we go into the next one.